Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast, all things competitive in the world of Warhammer 40,000. My name's Eric, and with me is the Orky One, my co-host Robert.
Wah.
Ray is actually on assignment. He'll be joining us in a few weeks. So good luck with your new endeavor there, Ray, and we'll have you back on the show in no time. But first thing we need to get to, we're going to get some sad news out of the way to get things started here. Good friend of the show, good friend of our team, good teammate, and this all-around really good guy, Brett Fellers. He's a gentleman who's part of our team in our local area. Passed away this past weekend, and cause is not quite cleared up at this point. He had several health concerns over the past year, and we had a few fundraisers to help him and his family cover some medical costs. But in addition to all that, he did contract COVID, so we're not sure which one was the culprit, but it really doesn't matter. He's not with us now, and he'll be missed at this point. Rob, I don't know if you had a chance to meet Brett or getting a couple games in with him.
I had one game with him at a tournament, and it was the silliest thing ever, because after I kind of blew up half of his Blood Angels with the good old triple shock tech gun orc stuff, for the next four turns, I could not kill a single Blood Angel scout. I could kill everything else, just not that scout. And it was fun to play against him because he was a good sport, and I could definitely tell he was a good dude. And I do feel upset that I did not get to chat or play with him more often because he was stuck at home, obviously, with a lot of his endeavors.
Yeah, I think the hardest part was he's also the kind of guy that, how do I describe this? Let's put it this way. He was always in the running for the wooden spoon. And he knew it, and he'd still, you know, played to the hardest, and he did sneak up on a couple people. And I'll be first to admit, my last game with him before last time we played, he actually won, and I was caught me by surprise. I was like, wow, I didn't know that army did that. But he was always there. He showed up to help set up. He was there to clean up. He just showed up because he wanted to be part of the group, and he was a good part of the group, and it's always someone you could talk to. And it's going to be missed. So I feel terrible for both he and his family, and the community really lost somebody strong there. So, so just thank you for indulging. We will miss you, and move forward from there. So as we look over, this is their first real weekend of tournament coverage this weekend with the new balancing data slate that came out. Since our last discussion, Robert, any other notices or, you know, changes in lists that you've noticed that, like, I didn't think of that before?
Well, I actually did have a game just before recording with only two plain orc list and a kill rig and all that wonderful stuff. And me and my opponent, we both kind of agreed that the freebooter idea with two planes still is a scary thing to look at, because I think in about 2.5 turns against his sisters, I was actually able to clear out an entire brick of Sacrosaints, all of his rhinos, and potentially kill Celestine twice. But with him going first and killing my planes, it took a lot of teeth out, because melts is a thing. So I generally think with the way the balance is going to work out, it is definitely going to swing things more into a not so aggressive first turn go for orcs, at least. Whereas ad mech, they still have plenty of tricks, because as far as I can tell from the events that we're going to be covering today, ad mech did not win a single one of them. So obviously some balancing against them came into play. And Dark Eldar is back on the number one spot because of it, because they don't need any balancing tricks, really, because they can just do a bunch already.
I wouldn't say they need balancing tricks, but I think there are other tools in the toolbox now that are coming to the forefront. And but it was interesting. One of the first ones I was going to say I'm noticing being pulled out is, I don't know if it's too soon, because I thought the flyer lists were dead. And that is the, you hear a lot about Trueborn, you know, because they have a 2+ unmodified. They ignore all hit modifiers. So they're hitting planes on twos. And generally you took a 10-man squad with 2 blasters and a dark lance. And you usually took them as your choice. So you, most of the time you saw them as black hearts, so they got one reroll, or you took them as when it's blanked on it, Obsidian Rose, and they get the reroll to wound. And they were the kind of the firepower. There were a couple lists out there that involved 2 units of Trueborn, so they would have 2 separate detachments and mix and match. And first thing I noticed, like, well, geez, how expensive are they now, especially with the Raider cost going up and the Trueborn going up? I was like, I'd still need some dark tech, you know, dark light to really help things out. So I actually took my Trueborn out of the list, have a min squad of warriors and a Venom just for being action monkeys and holding objectives. And it's replaced it with a Ravager. Oh my gosh, a Dark Lance Ravager, something you've never heard of. You know, it's like, but it's literally half the cost. So I'm like, yeah, sure, I'll do that.
Because the Ravager gets 3 Dark Lances or 1 and 2 Disintegrators?
It's your choice, actually. You can mix and match. So back in the day, in 6th edition, 7th edition, I used to run 2 Disintegrators and 1 Dark Lance because there was all kinds of weird. If it moved, it could only shoot 2 weapons. And if it didn't move, it could fire 3. So I always had a different setup. But last, 8th edition, it was all about triple Disintegrators, because you're just looking for a volume of fire. And right now I'm running 3 Dark Lances, but I am still going back and going, Disintegrators are, you know, they're still a strength 5 AP 3, 2 damage weapon. It's still a marine killer. And if you're getting 9 shots downfield, it's not too bad. So
it falls into the same wheelhouse as like the scrap jets for orcs, where no single unit should have the business of rolling 60 shots like it does. But when you do points for efficiency, it's proof is in the pudding. Like, you just have to do it because it's over efficient for what it does.
Right.
And a triple Dark Lance Disintegrator, that's half the points of a Trueborn plus a Raider. That means for every pair, you could technically get 2 of them and have just as many Dark Lances.
Yeah, so you're trading 2 Dark Lances and 2 blasters for 3 Dark Lances. You can almost, for almost 6 Dark Lances. You do lose OBSEC, and that's an issue because those Trueborn were still troops when they popped out. And if they popped out, it's not that big of a deal. I mean, because once they're out of the Raider, they got the reroll ones to hit, from the Archon. But generally, if they're out of the Raider, they're an endangered species anyway. So it's like,
yeah. The other thought process is, like, if people were bringing 2 units of Trueborn plus a Raider, you, by getting if you want to, you could do 3 Ravagers and have points left over to bring, like, racks or whatever for really tough OBSEC choices.
Yep.
So it's kind of give and take at that point.
Yeah. The other one I'm still on the fence about, because with the points reduction to Grotesques, they are now competing with Incubi. And they're both, Incubi have a slightly better weapon. I think it's -3 versus -2. Both are 2 damage. The Incubi have a chance to get up to -3 with some buffs. I think it's exploding 6s. But the big difference is a 1-wound toughness 3 model versus a 3-wound toughness 5, possibly toughness 6 when it's surrounded by Homoculus. Mm-hmm. So it's like, And then
Yeah, it is definitely a weighing your options. Like, if you're a skilled enough player, like someone like Sean Naden or our local guy Dan, where if you know how to apply something, you don't have to worry about it surviving, because you know you're going to send it in there, it's going to kill the thing, and then your opponent's going to have to really dig to get to it. So, like, Incubi in the hands of a skilled player would be better, but then you could go to Grotesques and literally make your opponent go, God dang it, I need to dedicate how much fire to kill these gosh darn things?
Yep.
Sure, you don't do as much damage, but it's more of a nuisance. So it just becomes how you want to apply that level of force.
Yeah. So I'm torn. Incubi are one of my favorite models. And with the upgrades for this new codex, I was like, finally, they're finally the threat they were supposed to be. But the list I took to LVO last had 16 grotesque in it. I think that was right. 2 units of 8, if I remember right.
That's a lot of wounds.
Yeah. No. And oh, by the way, it also had, I think, four Talos. I can't remember. It was, I have to pull it up, but it was, you know, it was incredibly coven heavy, mm-hmm. and it was perfect for the Iron Hands meta. You know, yeah. It was a lot of, and then all the, yeah, because all the Talos and I think it had Scourges also with Haywire. So they're like, ah, oh, I have the Richard Siegler build. You can't kill me. It says take mortal wounds. What? That's, what happened to my damage yeah. reduction? I'm sorry. It doesn't work for mortal wounds.
Yeah. Feel no pain all you want. You're still going to die.
Yeah, exactly. So back then it was, they were Prophets of Flesh. So they all had a 4+ invul. Plus, feel no pain. Now, you would probably run them as the custom. I think it's all consuming flesh or provocateurs of flesh. I think it's called. Basically, it's one minus one damage. Mm-hmm. So you still have a 5+ feel no pain. You don't have the, you have the 5+ invul after turn 4 or so. But no, you have no coven heaven naturally. Excuse me. And but yeah, the then you're minus one damage. So that's pretty nice. So I was like, huh. So yeah. I don't know. I'm torn what to do with my list.
It's also kind of the same thing like with orcs. Like you either bring the buggies where you instantly die to dark lances, melta, anything that's strength 8, which is the current meta right now.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could go to more squig units where squigs are just naturally minus one damage. They aren't as tough, but I mean, minus one damage can eventually build up, so it's that kind of give and take, similar to how incubi or grotesques. Which one do you want?
Yeah. So yeah, I'm curious to see what the orc think. I've been hearing a lot about kill rigs, so I'm a little scared of that. And
yeah, we'll see if anyone can do something with it, or if someone already has. Because so far, I just know that it's still freebooters, at least. Mainly until we get to see something else,
right? And as for AdMech, we didn't see it this weekend. The prevailing rumors I've been hearing is, you know, look for Castellan robots to make a comeback, mm-hmm. and so that'd be interesting to see. But I'm also going to see if another list or another faction. Basically, I did see a few stream games of the early rounds of the U.S. Open, which we'll talk about a little bit later. One player bringing an entire armature list, and knowing that they were playing with the new data sheet, they were all OPSEC. So,
and 5 models. So that's a lot of wounds.
Right.
And a lot of bodies.
And I always forget how fast knights are. Yeah. I think of as lumbering, you know, they're not, they're like moving 12 inches. I was like, oh, what? That's rude. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I still remember one of my games in 8th edition when I was starting to get really competitive with Necrons. I was against knights. It was Raven. He had the Castellan. He had the Gallant. He had at least 2 Armagers and then 2 other big knights. Or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I accidentally won that game because I forgot to use 12 inches of my deployment zone. So instead of deploying 24 inches forward, I only deployed 12.
Ooh.
Because I thought I only had that much space.
Whoops.
So his Gallant took 2 turns to get to my army, and by the time it got there, it was down to like 2 wounds. So I killed it in Overwatch. It didn't explode, and I got to shoot down range at the Castellan, and it was. But no, knights are surprisingly fast, and on a smaller table. I know my opponent tonight, Mark Follows, Mr. local big stompy robot guy. He is super excited to go back to playing knights, and knowing how much he loves playing them, he is going to probably do something really wacky with them until he figures out what he actually wants to do.
Yep. Yeah, he's got a good head for that type of army. He's done really well with them.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
So let's dive into it. Let's talk about it. The U.S. Open. So this is not the tennis tournament in New York. We're talking about the last of the triumvirate of GW events. And so that's one thing. Robert, you're fairly new to the game. What are your thoughts on GW returning to tournament play?
Well, I'm used to paying a lot of money to go to events for travel. I don't think $100 per ticket was going to be in my ballpark. But from the sounds of it and from the looks of it, it probably took off fairly well, seeing as they had a plethora of players, something like, five pages worth on BCP of players. So it was clearly almost 300 players. Because people are going to go, people are going to enjoy themselves. So next year, if I can squeeze at least one of them in, I'll probably go and see for myself how it is. But otherwise, I'm very much I like my status quo of normal ITC procedures.
I like a little bit of change. I'm also, when people say, okay, GW ran an event, this is a true. They ran it, so which was kind of a misnomer in the past. People said, well, back when GW used to run events, but they really didn't. You bought an event package from GW and you ran it yourself. It wasn't like any chamber showed up and ran your event for you. That didn't happen. So basically, this back in the dark ages, you couldn't. There was no internet, so you actually had tournament packets mailed to you. Mm-hmm. And the nice thing was you could also buy trophies and plaques and stuff like that from. And now it's basically the different packages. So do you want to give out certificates? Do you want to give out a plaque? Do you want to give out a trophy? And it's paid Games Workshop X number of dollars. They mailed it to you. You never knew what missions you were going to get. You just said, I need this many rounds, and you got it, and you ran the tournament yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a kit. And over time, if you ran enough events, we used to make photocopies and knew the tournaments. And the missions were interesting. They were not book missions. That's a myth. They were not. But it was a good time. At least you knew what to expect. And some missions were more balanced than others. They've definitely come a long way. And the hardest part is the independent circuit started to open up a little bit, and that's basically where the term open comes from. I think it's ironic that they called us the U.S. Open, because what it used to mean was we're not following GW rules. Mm-hmm. But as the independent circuit came around, you saw a lot of variations. So it's just an interesting coming about, as we'll get to some of the other events that happened this weekend. You've got GW running three events in our backyard. This used to be, they used to run one or two, and most of them were in England and Warhammer World, or their equivalents here in the United States. And they were not always the most competitive events, and this was not the case. So, they did, for those of you who don't know, they followed the Nova format, which is no surprise since Mike Brandt, who used to run the Nova Open, is now head of their events. So if you're not familiar with the Nova Open format, they take your day one, you play your round robin, your simple Swiss pairings. And then day two, they group you into smaller pods. Now, for this event, because they had so many players, they took groups of 16 players. And then your day two is basically an RTT. You will only play people in that top 16 bracket. So if you're like me, who's middles around in mid-table obscurity, so you'd be like, the 16 players that are all 3-2 or 1-2-2 the day before. So the nice thing is, no matter how bad you did on day one, you can wake up the next morning and go, okay, I'm going to win my bracket. That's my goal this weekend. And that was my goal when I went to Nova. I was so excited the 1 year I finally won my bracket. Granted, it was like bracket, you know, 343, but I still won. You know, it's and it sounds silly because there were guys running around with their medal. Look at me, I won my bracket. You're like, bracket 12. Okay, good for you. But it's a source of pride, you know, and it's also a much better experience. I think the only thing that gets some people down is, as mentioned, the top 16, which we're going to focus on here. What about the guy who comes in 17th place? Even if he goes undefeated on game on day two, sorry, you're not winning the event. So,
Yeah, the only other thing that I know was heavily talked about, even amongst us in Smite Club, the terrain. The pictures that some people caught from the streams, it was a very empty-looking table.
And that was weird, because I had actually taken some screenshots from the New Orleans event, and I was like, wait, that's what they've always had, right? And then I started flipping through, and I was like, no, they had two smaller, like, the cargo containers used to be in the front, in the middle, right? Between the four big blocks, and that's what's going, huh, what happened? Maybe it's just this mission, and that was not the case. So yeah, you had about a 12-inch by 12-inch square of openness right at center field. I was like, whoa, that's not good. Like
the one picture that I'm looking at in reference to this, it's a game against Adeptus Sororitas and Chaos Knights. And that list has like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 war dogs in it, the little armagers. Sure, between the big buildings you could only fit one at a time, but as soon as you get into the middle area, the Knights player could easily fit all 11 just in the cross of the table and not leave the space of the terrain. Like that's where I'm just like, no, you don't do that. You put a forest or something. You put dense terrain in the middle just to obscure line of sight. That's all you do. Like, sure, you can shoot through it, but you take a penalty. Like, come on.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'll be honest with you. I promised I would, and I haven't yet, is actually playtest on that type of terrain that they have there. And it's, first of all, it's interesting. It's GW Ruins, which, interesting, I saw a lot more of the orc stuff from Kill Team on stream. I was like, oh, look at that. But it's much bigger. So, for example, the average ruins that you see in the box is 8 inches by 6 inches. It's their average size. But if you look at it, they're putting like two or three kits next to each other. So it is almost a 12-inch by 12-inch square, which is what Nova has been since 5th edition. And pretty close to the ITC, if you bought the Frontline Gaming terrain, those are 9-inch by 9-inch right triangles. So it's like, interesting. Yeah. We're adding. So for competitive play, there are larger ruins than you see on the box when you buy something from GW. So,
yeah. The one thing that I can definitely be happy about is, I know there's always been the issue of, oh, the terrain has basing. Where does the cover start? GW did a really good thing of putting the clear bases underneath the ruins, so it could be a nice level playing surface and you're not having to worry about knocking something over or ruining the terrain piece or something like that, because it's a nice square that it's sitting on, but you can still see everything and you can definitely tell where you are in the ruin versus benefiting from something that you shouldn't.
And those things are pretty cheap too. I was surprised. I found one at Home Depot. It's 11 by 8. So I was like, okay, this is approximately the size I need. And so I'll be doing some experimenting with it, because you can do some little stuff by adding a little bit of rubble. I like it because it does, you can see the mat through it. So visually it's pretty clear, but it's also, you can see where it ends. If you really want to be technical, you could probably paint or the edges so you know where the ruin officially ends, that sort of thing. But yeah. Those clear bases are growing on me. I'm okay with that.
Yeah. But otherwise, I think before I go to a GW event like this, they really need to tighten up the terrain so that way it's not shooting through Planet Bowling Ball and the Planet Bowling Ball is actually a donut.
Yeah, I felt more, I felt very Gettysburg. You know, there's places to hide, but then there's this huge stretch of open territory you got to charge up the hill. I'm like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. But on the other hand, maybe that's the variation we need from event to event, you know, which type of terrain model you're using at this point. So, you know, versus that versus player place terrain, you know, it's two very different experiences and build your list accordingly. You know, just what we talked about earlier, what if I knew I was going to that event, I'd probably look at the grotesques over the incubi at this point, knowing if they knocked out their transport, they still could take a couple shots before they got to their target.
Yeah. So do we want to cover the entire top 16 or just the top five?
Let's go, yeah, just a couple notable names who did not make the top 16, just to add all. We talked about Sasha Edelkraut quite a few often. He ended up going 3-1 in the second day. James Keeling, also of Goonhammer fame, did really well. Also going 3-1 in the day two. David Villarreal, a Salamanders player from Texas, also going 3-1. Friend of the show, James Watkins, also 3-1. So some big names. Also Thomas Bird, forgot about that. He's from Pro Tabletop. Going 2-2.
Mr. Ultramarine.
Yep, 2-2. Did a really nice job there. Some really tough competition, and that's just the folks there who missed the top 16 cut. So that's the bracket two.
Yeah, and one name that I actually do recognize, Nathan Fennell.
Mm-hmm.
Ended up all at the end of the event, ended up in 38th.
Yeah, considering they said how many people there are, still a fantastic accomplishment. So let's go through the top 16 rather than the top five, just because there's quite a few notable names here.
Yeah. So at in 16th was Benjamin Hunt with Tyranids. Then Tim Vanderhul with Grey Knights. 14th was Dan Sammons with just Imperium Soup. Soupy soup, soup, soup. Then 13th was Matt Alley with Chaos Knights.
He's a big-time Texas player. Doesn't venture too far out of Texas too often, but nice, interesting he's playing Knights because I always knew him as an Eldari player. So,
and then in 12th place, we got Clifton Murka Russell playing Orcs, playing Free Buddhas. Just curious because this may be interesting or not, but I'll pull that up for later. In 11th, we got Mr. TJ Lanigan with Chaos Poop.
You know what? You know, he's took a lot of heat earlier in this season, but he's out there. He's at least attending two events a month, so he's not hiding. So I give him credit for at least showing up and playing. So,
mm-hmm. And then 10th place was Ivan Cho. 9th was Brian Jones with Imperial Knights. 8th was Colin McDade with Drukhari. I've seen this man in almost every tournament that I've gone to outside of Arizona. This man is busy.
Yes. He's also a good friend of the show. If you remember, he did the talked about the terrain at his event. But interesting, he forgo Harlequins for Drukhari. So,
in 7th place, we have Justin Moore with Cult Mechanicus. In 6th place, the Golden Boy, John Lennon, playing Tyranids. Come on, man. John Lennon needs to stay in the Imperium. He needs to stay there.
I give John Lennon a lot of credit for he never plays the same list twice, so it's good luck trying to tech against his playstyle. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm going like, okay, what does he see in Tyranids? And I have a pretty good idea. I'm going to take a quick look at this while you keep reading the list. But
yep. And in 5th place, we got Mr. Manny Chima, the man who doesn't stay to an army for more than one event.
I would laugh if he would switch. If it was allowed, could he switch armies mid-event? I think he would.
He would bring three armies, probably. In 4th place with Anthony Vanilla, probably not ice cream. In 3rd place was Jack Harpster. 2nd place, always the bridesmaid, never the bride, Mr. Sean Naden. And in 1st place, the crazy Beep Boop himself taking a turn to the dark side, playing Dark Eldar, Richard Siegler.
Crazy stuff.
Yep.
All right, so take a look at stuff. So Richard Sigler, yeah, Richard Sigler playing Drakkari just doesn't sound right, but I don't expect him to play. But surprise, surprise, we just talked about it earlier in the show. So he comes in with a Michaelis, two units of racks at the minimum size, but then one big block of 18?
17.
Oh, yeah, there.
No, that is 18, yeah. The Akathist, the rack with the Ossifactor, yep. And then 16 more.
And then two units of four Grotesques, and then two units of two Talos. So, maybe I have done my homework. And then a second attachment, a mixed group, but it's a very Coven-heavy with racks, and then two units of three Chronos. And then finally, the last attachment, very large court featuring four Urgles and four Slith. Not sure how to pronounce that, but that's fun to say.
Slith, yeah.
Yep. And then an Archon, more racks, and then a unit of Mandrakes, which is great for Rod. So, again, no Trueborn, not a lot of witches. This may be the Drakkari of the future. So, and
yeah. It's definitely looking like, because I know that was the big talk of Drakkari going to mainly pain engines, basically going to a tankier version of the list, because the old list was very glass cannon. It was very fast. It could get in your face and it could hit really hard. But if you didn't get to hit first, or if you didn't survive a shooting phase, it was most likely you're not going to come out of that game unscathed. So like against the orc matchup, that list that Siegler brought would be better because the multiple damage is mitigated by the fact that you have more wounds, you have feel no pains, and you can have naturally higher toughness.
Yeah, let's just double check when you mentioned that. Yep, he's got the, he took the heavy options on the Talos, by the way. So the Talos Gauntlet, you mentioned before, strength 8. It's not good against orcs. The opposite. It's not good for orcs is what I'm trying to say. So he's leveraging the minus one to hit for the extra power. And he also has a Talos Ichor Injector, which is free mortal wounds. You hit and you D3 mortal wounds each. And of course, Arnon with two Heat Lances each. So,
yeah. And knowing from playing against you, because you were so excited when you finally got to do it, but you couldn't do it, bring him back a Talos with a Chronos and stuff.
Damn, 6-inch range.
That entire idea of just, oh, here's this like 7 or 8 wound model that I just resurrect. Imagine if you could do that with an orc buggy. Imagine if you could do that with a Castellan robot, like all of this other stuff that is super tanky and hard to kill. Just imagine if you could stand it back up consistently. Yeah, that's definitely going to be the name of the game. So I think that is what we're going to be seeing from Dark Eldar, unless someone has a preferred playstyle of being quick, nimble, and cutting like a razor knife.
You mean like Sean Naden?
Yeah.
So let's take a look at his list real quick. Also, it starts with the Court of the Archon, two Sliths, two Urgles, and then Archon Homoculus Succubus. Just want to double check. Is he... Da, da, da. He is indeed doing a real space raid detachment. So he's got the Archon Homoculus and Succubus, Precision Blows, along with a Trip Witch and Archite Glaive. To go with his arc. So, wow, he is arming his succubus to the teeth. A unit of 8 Homoxolites, 5 Kybalite Warriors, and then
5 Witches.
5 Witches, thank you. With Hypex. So, he's still using them for the speed to get onto objectives. 2 units of 5 Incubi. And this is where I love this stuff. This is my bread and butter. I love this stuff. A unit of 10 Hellions, a unit of 10 Hellions, and a unit of 6 Reavers with special weapons. And of course, my phone's not paying attention. It's got, interesting, it took the Grav Talons. I hate those damn things. They don't do enough.
Because the Grav Talons are like short-range blasters or something like that? Or
when you finish your charge before the fight phase, they inflict a mortal wound on a 4+.
Oh, so they're a cheap version of the nose drill on orc buggy.
Right. So it's just the whole 4+ afflict a mortal wound. In 7th edition, they inflicted D6 basically hits, and then the upgrade one, the bikes themselves did D6 hits, and then the upgraded one did 2d6. So before you swung, I was just I could take out like a squad of five Marines. It was awesome.
Yeah.
I loved it. And they haven't quite gotten back to that. So anyway, going back down, we mentioned, talked about the Ravager. There it is. Three Dark Lance Ravager, along with three Raiders, all with Dark Lances. And then he has a second detachment featuring, this is wild, a custom Cabal, Dark Mirth, and Webway Raiders. And I have to look that up. I believe Dark Mirth is the fallback and shoot. Webway Raiders allows you to use the Deep Strike stratagem more than once. So you
can,
and then so you got the Archon, the along with Drazar, another unit of Gavlite Warriors, and then a Venom probably to curt everybody around.
Because Drazar wouldn't get the custom Cabal traits, right? Because he's a agent for hire.
Correct, which is interesting because the Incubi, because they're in a real space raid, do get the custom Cabal. In that case, they would get, he made them, I believe, Blackheart. Yeah, which is exactly how I run them. So that means your Incubi are able to charge and advance a charge on turn one.
Because the real space raid, from what I'm seeing on Naden's list, let's see, yeah, Cabal of the Black Heart, Real Space Raid, the Prophets of Flesh. Right. So you get to pick a little bit of everything for that?
So with the Real Space Raid, you have to have a minimum one HQ from Covens, Witches, Cabal, and one troop. So one unit of Witches, one unit of Warriors, one unit of Rack of some kind. You can't upgrade one, two, or three of those guys to their Uber HQs, and then likewise, well, after you do that, you can also upgrade them to Trueborn, Bloodbrides, and Homoxolites. The advantage of that is the Archon now gives his reroll ones to everybody in that detachment, as long as they're core. So when you play me, that's why my Talos get to reroll ones, because he's babysitting those, which is harkens back to the old Blackheart Ravagers. We had one Archon surrounded by three Ravagers, and he would give them the
reroll hits.
Yeah, so he's rerolling ones to hit and wound. So
yeah, rerolling ones because of himself, and then Rid of the Living Muse.
Yep.
Yeah. The I guess it makes more sense when I actually look through it now because he does have the three Raiders just for transporting things. He probably keeps both units of Incubi and the Archon in one boat and everything else kind of shoved into other ones. And then probably has Drazar in the Venom with the Cabalite Warriors, maybe as like a delivery system for him, because would Drazar give his like plus one to wound buff to Incubi still?
Yes.
Okay. So that makes a little more sense because he, instead of having Drazar sit in a boat and potentially get shot off the board, he can keep Drazar safe for him to be deployed later.
And by the way, I was completely wrong on Dark Mirth. I got it mixed up with Deadly Deceivers. So everybody at the internet, you can stop yelling at me. I found it. So Dark Mirth, this is a wild one. I remember reading this last night going, I wonder if there's any play in this. It gives all your Cabal units a aura which does the following. While it is within 12 inches of this unit, each time an enemy unit is selected to make a normal move, advance move, fall back, or is selected to charge, roll a d6. On a 5+, that unit suffers a mortal wound.
And because he has the Venom with an Archon and a Cobblite Warrior unit, the Cobblite Warrior unit, because it's 5-man strong, you could string that out to be a big old bubble of just like, hey, mortal wound to you, mortal wound. So instead of doing massive damage with like a whole bunch of Dark Lances in one go, one of Naden's things is that he's plinking you with literal poking sticks until you fall over dead because you have a bunch of sticks in your ankle.
Yeah. So I remember when I looked at it, I was just thinking, okay, moves and charges. So there's two opportunities per turn. But then I'm going on a 5+ though. How much would that really happen? So I don't know. I'm curious. I have to watch, see if one of his games streamed and see how it went. I was also slightly wrong on Web Raiders. So just while correcting myself, I also do both. It reduces the cost of that stratagem by one. So you have more opportunities to do that.
So the one list I do want to cover is actually Mr. is Clifton Russell's freebooters list, because this was leaning in towards what I thought and what you were going into. He goes to a war boss on Warbike. He has 20 Gretchen. He has a single Ruckatruck Squig Buggy with Nitro Squigs, which that is the way you do it if you don't want to bring three if you want massive firepower. He has two units of two mech guns, all custom mega cannons. And then this is where I personally find it gets scary. He has two Hazpom Blaster Jets, both kitted out with super shooters, one of them with the 5-up invuln bubble, and one of them with the stick bomb flinga for points efficiency. And then he has a Death Skulls detachment of a Big Mech and Mega Armor, a War Boss and Mega Armor, two units of Commandos, three units of Grot Mega Tanks. He is a, this person is after my own heart, because those models are awesome.
Are those the Forge World things?
Yeah, they're one of the Forge World units, because there's little Grot tanks and then Grot Mega Tanks, where they look like they're made out of a battleship.
Okay.
And then two units of Storm Boys, a unit of a single Death Dread with four claws. So this thing is a melee monster. And then another unit of two custom Mega Cannon mech guns.
So what I'm seeing here, correct me if I'm wrong, which I probably am, so he's got the two Storm Boys, so the good news is they can interact with other flyers. He can charge other flyers, so freeing up his flyers to do whatever the heck they want. You got two units of Commandos, easily for Rod and deep penetration. And so where does the Mega Tank come in?
So the Mega Tanks are, since they're Grot units, they normally hit on fours, just like all Grots do. The thing is that the Grot Mega Tanks, he has one of them kitted out at 125 points with a total of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 flamers. Because it comes with 3 scorches and 2 double scorches, which I'd have to double check the book or go into Battlescribe and find out. But I'm pretty sure that's a whole bunch of flaming shots. And then the other two Grot Mega Tanks are kitted out with the same number of custom Mega Blasters, which anything with custom in the front of it is usually strength 8, at least AP minus 2, and at least D6 damage.
Yikes, yikes, yikes. Okay. And then, of course, you have all the cannons for just additional fire support. So,
yeah. The one thing that does bother me a little bit, but it does make more sense, he has all of his foot troops as being Death Skulls, so that turns the Big Mech, the War Boss, the Commandos, the Storm Boys into objective security units. And he has the Death Dread to be literally a wrecking ball, because it has four claws, it makes 6 attacks on its own in melee. Okay. And it has no shooting whatsoever.
Yikes. All right. Those are probably all like pretty high strength, so they can just fillet another vehicle, no problem.
Yeah, they get at least a strength 12.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah. Figure they're doubling it. Okay.
And the last two lists that I did want to kind of compare were John Lennon's and Manny Chima's, because they both brought Forces of the Hive Mind.
So once you open which one you want to look at, I'll look at the other one.
I actually have both of them open. Okay. So the one I'll go over is, pretty sure it's Manny Chima's. So you can pull up John's.
Yep.
So Manny, going with the High Fleet Leviathan, I guess there's a trend, with a Tyranid Prime with double sighting talons. I think he forewent the Warlord trait with strategic adaption. I'm not sure if that's a biological.
That's one of the Warlord traits for Leviathan.
Okay. Then yeah, that's an actual Warlord trait. Alpha Leader Beast, Swarm Leader. He adaptive neural lobe. Sadly, I'm not very well versed in Tyranids, but I've played enough against them that some of these things kind of look familiar. So, like, the things that he has on the Tyranid Prime aren't super familiar to me, but I know he's the cheapest HQ that they have. Then he has the Swarm Lord, good old Swarmy. And then he has two units of 12 Gene Stealers with some Acid Maws and some Scything Talons in there. One unit of minimum Termagants and then the big old brick of 27 devourers.
Wow. Okay.
That's a lot of bullets. Then he has one unit of Hive Guard so far, five of them. And then he has a patrol of Kronos with the Neurothrope, two minimum units of Tyranid Warriors, and then two more maximum size units of Hive Guard.
Wow. Okay.
Ow. I hurt a lot. and then just one more patrol detachment of the Forearm Emperor from Gene Stealer Cult of Amagus and one minimum unit of Acolyte Hybrids with blasting charges.
So Lennon's list is pretty similar. The general archetype is still there. It's just a little different, moving things around. He went with a Malanthrope as his HQ choice along with the Swarm Lord. Swarm Lord is pretty much your stock, whereas the Malanthrope picked up all the goodies from High Fleet Leviathan. It's still an Alpha Leader Beast and had the Swarm Leader Warlord trait, as well as the strategic adaption. Just like Manny, John took two units of 12 Gene Stealers with the Acid Maws. But interesting, he went harder on the troops as opposed to the Hive Guard. So, for example, John has two units of 26 Termagants, all with Devourers, and then an additional Harmagaunt squad of 19 and a unit of three Hive Tyranid Warriors. And interesting, he did take the Synaptic Link Bioweapon Bond, which I believe is the plus one to hit. So
yeah, Manny has that on both of his Tyranid Warrior squads as well.
Got it. So they're taking the same thing. Hive Guard, he's got a one unit of six. And then he also has a Lictor, which is usually used for Rod and other deep penetration type missions. Also has a Maliceptor, which is a... and he also gave them the Focal Essence, which I believe is a plus one the wound, but or it affects the wound roll up, I'm sure off the top of my head. Apologize if I'm wrong. And then you talk about some Forge World jank, Sky Slashers, which are the flying Ripper Swarms. That's just yeah. Hilarious. He definitely went low key on the Forearmed Emperor as well, a Patriarch with two units of Acolyte Hybrids. Again, this is strictly to get the blips on the table and use those to force your flyers from being able to get deep into the deep back lines. So,
yeah, and that is a general idea that I think both of them used. But obviously, Manny, in the times I've heard him get talked about, he has taken very, let's say, hammer drop kind of lists. I know there was a point in time where he played the Imperial Fists back in 8th edition. He tabled someone in 45 minutes with like several whirlwind, like three whirlwinds, three whirlwind Scorpiuses, three Thunderfire cans, something like that, that he could just shoot across the table. And the amount of shots from these Hive Guard, why? No one should ever be subjected to like 17 of these things. But I'm biased. If it worked for him, it worked for him. And it's...
Well, it's interesting because they both share the idea of volume firing, because the Termagants... I have to double check the... so you've got all these rerolls and plus ones, but they also have a stratagem to give them basically Tesla.
Yeah, exploding and, sixes. And I believe there's also a stratagem that lets that unit fire again, so you get to fire the unit twice.
Yes, I definitely know the Hive Guard. I'm trying to remember if you can do that for the Termagants, but
yeah, I think it works on both of them.
Right. So yeah, there's a lot of Tyranids are back on the menu, and so I'll be curious to see with the Gene Stealer Cult Codex coming out in January, you know, how much they'll still be able to pair together at this point, because that's one of the things I was flipping through the books, you know, now we had the balance slate. One of the things I kind of forgot about is maybe I could bring the Incarn back. And the latest Drukhari Codex made it very clear, you can add an Ari, but you're going to lose everything else if you do so. And I was like, it's not a good trade-off. So,
yeah, I have a feeling that Yunari is going to get either mixed into Craft Worlds, or they're going to make some kind of White Dwarf supplement for them.
I think Ray hit it on the head. There'll be an army of renown.
Yeah, that'd make more sense too.
Yeah, it's easy to say. You can only take from these units. Buy your three codices, maybe four, and then mix a bunch of data slates. But here's how you can field it. So
yeah.
So yeah, so GW wraps up their tournament season for North America, at least, and overall in success, but definitely room for improvement. And but like you said, look forward to going it back to next year, know what to expect, and still a fertile ground for what happens in the tournament circuit. So kudos on them. Glad to have them back.
Yep, it's definitely going to be an exciting time for a new face like myself, because those tickets sold out pretty quick, being like $110 a ticket.
Yeah, maybe I just think our maybe rethink my ticket prices, but we won't talk about that right now.
Yeah.
Well, since we are, so if you want a $55 ticket for a GT, look no further, because they just went on sale. Matter of fact, they're having a Black Friday special for the Scorched Earth Open, which will be in mid-March of 2022. Head on over to the Arizona Game Fair to purchase your tickets. We have already, from last season, people have carried over their purchases. So we're already a GT. We're at 38 players already and have room for 64, and we have potential to expand further. So get your tickets quickly. So they are, again, there's a Black Friday special going on. For more details, check out the Arizona Game Fair.
Hey, listeners, this is Raymond with the Extreme Honest Podcast, here to talk to you about KR cases. If you're like me and you're constantly looking for that better way to store your armies, then look no further than KR Cases. That's right, this is the foam company known for their soft blue foam in the cardboard cases. They're a great way to mix and match whenever you're heading out for that next tournament. You can just swap out those boxes and no need to worry about switching the foam in and out. They're sturdy. The boxes help protect your models, and when you order, they come fast, the order is right, and for a better price than the other guy. So go to krcases.com, and when you place your order, be sure to mention the Extreme Honest Podcast.
All right, let's head over to St. George's, England for the Glasshammer GT. So funny that Manny flew all the way to Texas when he could have just stayed home and played with all his teammates. But good for him. Actually, I heard him. He's on this most recent episode of Game Changers with Steve Joel, if you listen to that podcast. And I know a lot of people like to hate Manny for the type of lists he brings, but listen to him talk and listen to his passion for the game. Part of me says, how can you not like this guy? So,
man. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a person that you would enjoy. Oh my God, I'm losing by 60 points. I'm okay with this.
Yeah. Well, so you talk to him at the the store. You're like, oh, it's a great idea. What about this idea? And then you draw a game against him. You're like, what do you mean it's over? Oh my God. He's right.
Yeah.
So, anyway, Glasshammer GT, what's our top five look like, Robert?
Well, we got Dusty Justy with Grey Knights. Yeah, that name is just on the head. It's great. We got John Talbot with Death Guard. We got Maesic Chamer with Dark Eldar. We got Rich Bladen with Imperium Soup. And Vic Vijay with Grey Knights.
Feel bad for Vic. He's like, I'm the other guy. I'm not Mark Rubio. I'm in Rubio. I'm not Malik. I'm not Manny. I'm the other guy. Remember me. But just two other people to point out who did not make the top five, but some 40K royalty, actually. Both Nathan and Josh Roberts. So Josh came in seventh place, winning five games, five out of the six. And then his brother Nathan, not far behind in 14th. Excuse me.
Yeah,
14th place, yeah, with four wins. These guys were, if you remember, during 5th and 6th edition, the run that Team England had in the WTC, well, Josh was captain and his brother was part of the team as well. So it's nice to see them back in the competitive fold. They basically left 40K during 7th edition, saw a few smatterings in 8th edition, so it looks like they're back into playing. So just some amazing players that are finally back into the game. Good to see them there. So now we head back to the States. No, excuse me. We're still in England. Heath and Reach. I'm assuming that's a town in England by geography. Basically, if it wasn't part of the War of the Roses, I don't know where it is on the map. But this is the Twisted Onslaught GT. So who are our top five here?
Un momento. I accidentally closed that tab. I will get there. All right. So top five is Matthew William Victor Wright. Now I seem like I got him in trouble. with Imperial Fists. You sir, are a madman. Fourth place is Dom Maidlow. Three is Jack Tight. Second place is Franco McDonald with Chaos. Just Chaos Soup, I guess. And first place is Lewis Fitzsimmons with Grey Knights.
Just a quick look. What does an Imperial Fist list look like that makes fifth place? Primaris Chapter, Master Prize, Tech Marine, two units of five Assault Intercessors with Chainswords, an Assault Super Regular Intercessor Squad of 10, one Leviathan Dreadnought, one Primaris Agent, one Redemptor Dreadnought, three Relic Contemptor Dreadnoughts, a Suppressor Squad, as well as an Eliminator Squad, but then for some more Forge World Jank, two Rapier Carriers with Quad Heavy Bolters.
Taking huge advantage of the Imperial Fist chapter tactic of, guess what? Our bolters are really, really good.
And then look at the Chaos list, because, what? Chaos? Yes. So he's actually starting with a Nurgle Patrol with Bellicor, three units of three Nurglings, two units of five Furies. Wow, I haven't seen those in forever. Then adds a Supreme Command Detachment of Mortarian. My gosh. And then an Outrider detachment also of Nurgle featuring Epidemus. How many? One unit of two spawn, two units of single spawns, and then two floated bloat drones, which I cannot pronounce, another unit of Furies, and then two Plagueburst Crawlers.
Ah, so he was playing basically pure Nurgle outside of Bellicor. Because even the Furies are Mark of Nuggle, so that way they could share the detachments with everything else.
I'll be honest with you, I'd be looking at the list and going, what the hell does this do?
Yeah, and you look at him and go, where is your Battleforge bonuses? What do they do?
Yeah, this is wild, because the Nurglings are, deploying forward. You know he's going to try and take... I don't know if they look at what Furies do. I know they're pretty, not consequential, but why would you take three of them? I guess they're all action monkeys and holding down objectives. And I know the bloat drones are no joke in terms of killing power. Yeah, this is a fun list.
Yeah, and I actually took a peek at the third place orc list. This is actually an idea that I'm going to eventually run with, and this is someone using the brand new Army of Renown from the new Octarius book. The good old speed mob.
Interesting. All right.
So it takes the Deathkiller Wartrike because you have to take only vehicles, bikers, or planes. And he gave him just the big boss stratagem for the Speed King, which is a reroll ones within 6 inches of him for shooting. A brick of five Defcoptas. I'm assuming with the points cost of 250, they only took rockets. A maximum size unit of custom booster blasters, a maximum size unit of scrap jets, and a maximum size unit of rocket truck squeak buggies. And then two WAS bomb blaster jets, both with teleport and mega blasters, and one with the force field. Looks like he foregone the smasher gun, though. But I'm pretty sure it comes with it in point cost. So a whole bunch of killie shots. And then a Outrider detachment with his actual warlord, who is a war boss on bike, with Tequila Claw, faster than yous, as his warlord trait, which I can look up here shortly, along with three units of war bikers, because that entire detachment is your OBSEC for purposes of the mission, because the speed mob gives you OBSEC on all your bike units.
And just so we're also playing, we're not playing favorites here. Lewis Fitzsimmons with Grey Knights. What do you need to know about that list? Five Nemesis Dread Knights.
Oh, boy.
Three in the heavy attack slot and two Grandmasters in the HQ slots.
That is quite the Oh, so the fastest than used must have been from the Armor of Renown, which I can't look up at the moment. Oh, well. But now, I'm actually really happy that Grey Knights did come in first, because in all the events that we've been looking at, they've been kind of sprinkling themselves in the top 10. And this one, along with Glass Hammer, both got taken by Grey Knights.
Yeah, very interesting. It's fifth edition all over again. GW is running events. Grey Knights are on top.
PTSD, Eric. It's going to be okay.
The Roberts brothers are back in tournaments. The next event in question is the Nemesis 40K. Quick top five here. You've got Tom Carter in fifth with Death Skulls, Christopher Kulak with Thousand Suns. In third place, Corey Burns with Skitarii. Second place, Gord Wepler with High Fleet Leviathan. And Darren Jack takes this event in Edmonton, Alberta with Orcs. So Orcs back on top there. As you mentioned at the top of the show, no signs of AdMech really at the top. So looking at the AdMech here that made the top five is kind of your tried and true. Army Renown, the Skitarii veteran cohort, three large blobs of 20 Skitarii, and a bunch of Rust Stalkers to help get upfield, as well as the Sulfur Hounds, which, interesting, that's a little bit different from the traditional Raiders. So,
mm-hmm. It's because the Raiders went up in points.
Yep.
And then another detachment of still Skitarii veteran cohort of an extra Marshal, extra Vanguards, and two single units of Bellastari with their last cannons.
So pretty cool there. This was the other I was talking about. So talk about a beginning of an era, talk about an end of an era. So in terms of, you know, GW back in the game front and back into running tournaments, actually legitimate running tournaments, and kind of setting their own stamp for what terrain would look like, it's kind of sad. I mean, glad to see that the Renegade Open is back. It's one of the bigger events. I believe they are still in the... Yeah, they're still in Minneapolis, but there's also the I can't remember the game company. They have their own like convention center, so they let the play. But the biggest thing that was that made Renegade Open so cool was their unique missions. And what they would do is they had three missions that you could choose from on day one. And then they did the same, they had the same three on day two. And basically, so if you and I, Robert, were playing each other, I choose my mission, you choose your mission, we reveal them separately. And so I may be going for a kill point type mission. You're going for objectives. If I chose correctly, life is good. I've got a good matchup. But the important thing is I can only choose that once per day. And so my next opponent, I should have played the kill point mission against this guy. I already used it against Robert. I'm screwed. Oh, no.
Yeah, I've heard things about it. And obviously, because it's on the other side of the state, I have not been able to go and do it, but maybe if they're back once again next year, we'll see.
I don't know, Minnesota in November. I've gotten used to Phoenix weather, no thanks. All right, so what's our top five look like here?
All right, we have Connor Haugen with Deathwing. We got Tim Duran in fourth place with Salamanders. We got Oliver Smith in third place with White Scars. We got Charlie Andre in second place with Grey Knights. And to wrap up the Marine party, it's Matt Root in first place with Black Templars.
So there you go. The book's out, and Matt had nothing to lose. He's already won the Lord Marshal series, so why not run out the new codex? So High Marshal Helbrick, Primaris Chaplain on bike, two of them actually. Two units of Assault Intercessors, a minimum of five. Two units of Crusader Squads, looks like the minimum of five. Blayguard Veteran, Primaris Apothecary, three Redemptor Dreadnoughts, and a Terminator Assault Squad of, looks like seven, as well as Attack Bike.
Yeah, Sergeant. So seven Terminators. And I think I've seen this one before in a bat rep with Skari, because Skari has a little Black Templar pocket. With Champion of the Feast, I think that makes the Terminator Sergeant with like something like four wounds.
Yeah.
And he has a one up armor save and all this other good stuff because of Storm Shield. So
yeah, So, Charlie's Grey Knight list coming in. And I hate to say Grey Knights right now, it's in the middle mono listing, but you know what? If it works, run with it, because Charlie's trying to get back into the ITC top 10. He's been in and out all season. It's a good opportunity.
Yeah. But go ahead, Eric.
Sorry. I was just saying that pretty much wraps up our tournament coverage for this weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a little surprising recently to see this much Marine in the top five of any kind of event, with the nearest non-Imperium faction being Tyranids, piloted by Steven Winters, in 13th.
I think it's one of those, the hobby lag is less prevalent because everybody's got Marines on their shelf. And if, even if you look at Matt Root's list, I'm assuming he, you know, I'm not going to make accusations that he didn't have a pain, but there's a lot of players I think would say, I have those models on the list, I'm just going to call them Black Templars, even though they're painted white with red lightning bolts.
Yeah. And this is actually also really refreshing. In 8th place, we have Dylan Matusik with World Eaters. Kind of fitting for him to be in 8th place. But but that's just my little favorite highlight of the event. But nah, congrats to Matt Root. I know he's a solid player, and he's played a lot of different armies this season, hasn't he?
I have to go back through. I know he's bounced between at least two or three. I have to double check which one. Actually, I can do that now while we're making our transition to the ICC top 10. Because he actually made it into 10th place.
Mm-hmm. And
so he's looking at
mainly Dark Eldar, yep.
And he did play Orcs. He was at the team tournament, so that might just been take one for the group. So Black Templars is his first solo outing outside of Kamora. So, all right. I stand corrected. I thought he had a little more variety. I always still think of him as an Orc player, so that's where I'm like... Even when he played AdMech, he had the Orc conversions on the AdMech players.
Yeah.
So as you mentioned, yeah, the ITC top 10 as it finishes. Now, this does include most of the events we talked about. It does not include the GW event. They have not posted their scores yet, so this will change later in the week. But you always check out our Facebook page for more updates, as we like to post the top 25. You can see all the movement in the top players. But right now, the top 10 looks something like this. The Matt Root in 10th place. Anthony Vanellos, we talked about, coming in 2nd. I was able to leapfrog Matt because he's had a little bit more tournament success. 8th place, Nick Natavati, who spent the weekend in the booth with Matt, Paul Murphy. Let's call him Pat Murphy. There's no such thing. Paul Murphy there at the U.S. Open. 7th place, Colin McDade, who we talked about earlier. Jax Harpster also had a strong showing. His scores should be added in. Malik Amin-Rubio taking the week off, coming in 5th. Manny Chima having a great outing this weekend as well, coming in 4th. John Lennon trying to stave off all these challengers in 3rd. Sean Naden trying to leapfrog his good buddy there, Brad Chester, for 1st place. So Brad still hangs on the top spot with 1,404 points, a mere 12-point lead over Sean Naden. So I hate to say it, it's going to come down to LVO for determining the end of the season, as you know, we're already recording this the week before, the Monday before Thanksgiving. We know between now and the end of the year, the tournaments are going to be few far between. There may be some last-minute local stuff early January, but this is kind of the pause before the big show in Vegas.
Yep, so LVO is definitely going to be a race to the finish. My imaginary money is still on John Lennon going to be taking it this year. But we'll have to see what happens, because with the Custode book also being pushed back, that could have shaken things up a little bit, probably not as much as I think it would, but we'll have to see if Frontline will allow the Custodes and the Gene Stealer Cult books into that environment with such a short notice release.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what their previous, I think they've always done a 2 weeks prior moratorium, but I'll be honest, one thing that makes Frontline exciting is they never do the same thing twice. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, this is going to be my very first LVO So I'm super excited to just go there, get trounced, maybe have a drink or two, and then come home.
Yeah, I think that'll be a focus of our next episodes, that getting how to get ready for LVO, because it is unlike any other tournament. And this will be my fourth LVO. So I'll just try to, this is somebody who's been to Nova 3 times. This is somebody who's been to some of the other large, I've been to BAO twice. It's just something about it is just a very different animal, and I can't put my finger on it. So we'll have to talk about that as we're running a little bit long tonight, but that's a great topic for a future episode. So just getting ready for that type of tournament.
Yep. Well, Eric, like you said earlier, we do have tickets available for Scorched Earth Open available now at the Arizona Game Fair website. So it's $55, gets you the weekend pass to the tournament itself, and also entrance into the rest of the Arizona Game Fair, where if you're not busy rolling dice with us, you can totally walk around and see what other amazing games they have at the Arizona Game Fair. That's actually really hard to say.
So look forward to seeing you guys there. Any questions, go ahead and hit us up on our Facebook page and answering questions. But we are definitely revamping a lot of the train. Learned a lot from this last event, and plenty of space, like I said, available. And we're working with the convention hall to see if there's actually another room adjacent to us that we can expand on to further, should we have an explosion in ticket sales. But get your tickets fast so we can make those arrangements as soon as possible, because it's really, when you take the holidays out of the mix, it's 3 months away. So it's right around the corner, and a great way to start the ITC is just knock it out with a potential major on your ticket. So be really good to start off the season that way. Robert, any other parting thoughts before we wrap up tonight?
Nope. I'm just excited for a tournament I possibly have this weekend up in Flagstaff.
Yeah, that'd be really cool. Just be careful with the colder weather up there. So I don't know if it's getting snow yet up there or not.
Yeah, that's gonna be fun.
So in the meantime, I'll be here. our local league is starting up, so I'm gonna make some last minute changes to my list and trying to get some ideas what to do. And or do I even stick with Jukari? Do I just decide to forego the most powerful codex in the game and for something silly? So
all homunculus, do it.
I'm torn.
15 actually. Paid engines.
Yeah. Well, that was my old 6th edition list. It was the Corpse Thief Claw. But so I had 7 pain engines on the table. And this is a smattering of Reaver jet bikes. It was a lot of fun. But we'll see. I don't know. I'm not sure what to do with it yet. But this past week, we saw some new lists and some new ideas. And make the changes appropriately. So in the meantime, my name's Eric.
And I'm Robert.
And thank you for listening to the Exterminatus podcast.